Thank you for attending session 131, Plural Marriage, Our Story. Not my story, their story. Before we begin, we ask that cell phones are turned off and that those attending will be respectful and attentive. It is the mission of Sunstone to host thoughtful and respectful dialogue. Please keep that in mind when engaging in the Q&A portion of the session following the remarks of the presenters. Those who cannot abide by those guidelines should refrain from commenting, and they'll be asked to leave should they become disruptive. Do we have anybody here who wants to be the bouncer? Done. Gina Colvin is in the house. Gina, I don't know if you could be the bouncer and be bounced. I think you need to decide where you're going to land on that. I'm going to present our new friends who've come to share their stories with us today, and then I'm going to say a few words about how excited we are about this session and how we hope it goes. We have Edith Barlow. Edith has been living plural marriage for 21 years. She currently lives in northern Idaho in Canada and was born and raised in Hilldale, Utah. Has anyone here ever heard of Hilldale? Elise Barlow. Elise has been living plural marriage for 15 years. She currently lives in northern Idaho, Canada, and was born and raised in Hilldale, Utah. Third, we have Hannah Blackmore. Hannah. Was born and raised a fundamentalist Mormon in Lister, British Columbia, Canada. She's married and is currently living in Salt Lake City. And finally, we have Dolly Blackmore. Dolly is also Winston's daughter. Along with working as a CNA at a care facility, she helps Elsie with the Relief Society and Bountiful. Oh, no, I missed Elsie. I'm sorry, Elsie. I know we don't have Mary with us today. Elsie Blackmore is a daughter of Winston Blackmore. She's currently his oldest daughter at home, and she heads the Relief Society in the Bountiful community in Canada. Okay. So this is a 90-minute session, and last night we had the opening session, and we talked about what a special and specific place Sunstone is. And that sometimes we're called upon to wrestle with angels, just like Jacob did. And what in the LDS tradition do we wrestle with as much ferocity and hurt and misunderstanding as the principle of plural marriage? A few things, maybe, right? Race. Priesthood, but this is certainly in that trifecta. And so when we ask ourselves what we have come here to do, I hope that we all feel very grounded that first we are grateful. We're grateful to these women for coming and letting us be their friends. We're grateful to hear their stories so that the stories that we are imagining can be made real. So as we listen to what they have to say and we think about how we want to interact with this new facet, this new moment in Mormonism, that we begin in gratitude. And where we go from there is probably going to be pretty complicated. There are going to be things that we don't understand, things that we disagree with sharply. But I think if we begin with gratitude, that these stories are being shared and the opportunity is here. So even when there is a sharp opposition, that the place that we're coming from is correct. I think that that's, and I know this isn't Mormon, but amen? Amen. Okay. All right. Well, it is my great pleasure to introduce our first speaker, Ms. Edith Barlow.
Hi, I'm Edith. I was born and raised in Hilldale, Utah. I kind of need to make a disclaimer. I need everybody to understand that we are a little bit hesitant to do this because we've had so much media in our life. that has misrepresented us, has misunderstood us. And so when Lindsay asked me to do this, I was terrified. But it's true. We all have our own stories. And just because I live the way I live, I don't expect everybody to live it. We all have our own road in life. And just because someone isn't going down my road doesn't mean they're going down the wrong one. And the other thing I want to say is I'm not here to sell my lifestyle to anybody. It was my choice. It's what I chose to do. And it's what I love. It's who I am. But I'm not here to sell it to anybody to try to get them to say, this is the best thing in the world for you. We all have to find out for ourselves what's best for us. And the third thing I want to say is I want to make it very known that what I have to say here are my perspectives, my feelings, my opinions, my experiences, and I don't speak for anybody else. I don't speak for any of my sister wives that aren't here. They have their own voice. These are my experiences. So that being said, again, I was born and raised in Hilldale, Utah, and although my mother was the first mother, I was her 10th child, and by the time I was born, my father had 3 ladies. So I grew up in it knowing that, you know, having 3 mothers, and another one came when I was growing up. My mother was working all the time, and it was my second and third mothers that taught me, that sat me down and taught me the preschool and the kindergarten and the songs and things like that. And yet, you know, being born and raised in something doesn't make you converted to it. You know? And as I grew up and got into, you know, those horrible teenage years, struggling with what I wanted to do in my life and wondering what is it for me? What do I want? Where do I want to be in my life? What do I want to do? And I had to do a lot of soul searching and a lot of prayer and ask God, you know, what is it for me? And I, you know, I had older brothers and sisters that were doing what they were doing, but I knew I had to find out for myself what I wanted to do. And I chose to live plural marriage. I chose to marry Winston, and I became his 13th wife. And you know, thinking, people look and say, 13th? Are you freaking kidding me? But the reality was is that I didn't choose to just, I never once thought for a moment that it would ever be just me and him. And you have to go into it knowing you can't be selfish. And Winston is one of the busiest people I have ever met. And I got married, became his 13th wife, and I married Winston the same day as one of my older sisters from my father's family. She was 5 years older than me. And from day one, she never treated me less than an equal. She's never treated me as the little sister that came and ruined her life, you know. She has always treated me as an equal, and that, from day one, helped me so much. And being married at the same time, you know, we moved thousands of miles away, and we had each other to get through the lonely times when we were missing home. After we got married, we started right into tending kids and meal days and garden days, and we just stayed busy. And I am not here to sugarcoat anything. There was some dang hard days, and there still is. It's just not all peaches and cream. But we come to realize really soon that we have to have plural marriage. There's no big secret to it. People say, how do you do it? What's the secret? There's not one. It comes from within you. It comes from you wanting to do it, you wanting to make it work. And I can't even imagine my life without the people that are in it. I have some sister wives that are honestly my best friends. And we have some of the greatest times. They're there for me when I'm sad, When I'm happy, we laugh till we cry. They're there for my children when I can't be. I'm a full-time working mother. And, you know, some of the factors that I feel like contribute to any success that we've had in our family, again, I reiterate, this is my perspective. Number one, Winston, from day one, would never, ever let one of us bitch about another one. Excuse the French. But he has always said from the beginning, don't ever complain to be about one of the other ladies. If you have a problem, you either figure it out with her or get over it. A lot of times I just had to get over it. And he says, I don't listen to them complain about you. I won't listen to you complain about them. And that is a huge factor in it, is if you have a man that's converted to it as well. We don't have a matriarch. We don't have a head mother in charge that we that we have to account to or anything. We are all agents of our own. And we all have our children, and we, you know, with that many women, there's so many different ways to raise children. And I raise mine, and she raises hers, and she respects what I do. And so if she sees my children doing something, you know, your mother wouldn't like that. And that helps so much. Winston, from day one, has always promoted peace. Always, always, whether it's between us and a child, or, you know, he's always, always promoting peace. And it makes such a difference when you have a husband that won't cause discord among the ladies. You know, and he has always required fairness with children. They're all my children, he says. And if you're going to go buy popsicles, you're going to have to buy 145 of them. You know. You know, and I have to tell you this experience one day we were talking about, like, he's very, very, very strict against, don't hit the children. There's no reason when you discipline them. There's a better way to do it. He grew up quite in a very disciplined, and as we did, you know, we were the old-fashioned back-in-the-day guys. He says, one day we were sitting around talking, and we were talking about it, and he says, I don't care what you have to do, but don't strike them. He said, think about what worked for you as a child. And I said, sometimes a good swat in the hind or worked for me. And he says, well, deal with them the way I deal with you when you're having a struggle or a mood. And I said, well, I can't really go get in my truck and say, goodbye, I'm going to work. You hope you get over it. You can't do that to a two-year-old. Anyway. But, you know, these are just some of the... With that being said, because I want to give all these girls have some really, really amazing things to say, some of the things that I've learned from plural marriage and what they've done for me. Number one, they made me really realize how human I am and feelings that I just never thought were possible. They were like helium balloons and you're trying to pop them down. And as one's going down, the other one's coming up and you're just like, where did these come from? But you deal with them. And it's not the end of the world if you have a bad day. You just pull up your boots and carry on. And everybody's not going to hold it against you. And it's made me really independent. It's made me stronger. It's made me trust myself to make decisions without having to be told everything to do, every decision to make. With my children, with myself. If I need to go to town, I go to town. And I know that Winston's not going to be going, where are you, what are you doing? He trusts that I just am doing what I need to do. It's made me really rely on God for contentment and love. So many times we rely on someone to keep us happy, to keep us content, to keep us feeling loved. And yeah, that helps, it really does. But it really makes us rely on God through every aspect of it. It's made me realize that it isn't all about me. It's just not. It's made my heart so huge in realizing that what I may need and what I may want, someone else too. And again, I'm not saying for any second that it's perfect, because it's most certainly not. Another thing is, I realize that if you stay busy, there's really a lot of time for jealousies and all the, like I said, those helium balloons that pop up that you wonder where they came from. I know this might sound different to you guys, but one thing it's made me realize is that we're not all equal. My needs are not the same as someone else's. We all have different needs, and we all have different wants. And what I may need or what I may want, someone else doesn't need that, and vice versa. So as far as me feeling like that I should be treated equal as her, I don't need those things. I hope you can understand what I'm trying to say here. The other thing is that after living this for 21 years, monogamy looks kind of boring. I mean, and I don't say that in any way against people that are living it at all. But, you know, you live in such a high-paced world and all this that I can't imagine it just be me and him. And one day he says, "Oh, I can't even imagine living just with one of you guys." And I said, "Right back at you, dude." I mean, I love him with all my heart, but it's just nice that we have a break. I'm really glad that I always have someone there for my children. Right now, while I'm down here doing this, I've got a wonderful, wonderful, my best friend, sister wife, that has taken care of my children, that is loving them as if they were her own. She is, they call her mother, and I'm mommy. And, you know, I'm so glad that I have so many mothers that will love my children, because they truly do. And vice versa. This girl right here, she's not my flesh. She is. But I love her just as much. And she has a piece of my heart that nobody else can fill. That is her spot. And this one. You know, and there's just nothing that compares to that beats walking into the house after a long day of work and having a four-year-old that's another mother's kid wrap his arms around you, grab your leg while you're trying to walk up the stairs with the bags full of groceries and your purse and everything, and says, "Boy, Mother Edith, I missed you today." Nothing compares to that. It just, you know, it makes it all worth it. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Elise. I'm Edith's sister, biological sister, that is. So I'm glad to be a part of this Many Mormons event, because my beliefs are Mormon, and I consider myself Mormon. So I was thinking about history, and I think history is stories. It's everyone's different stories. So I would like to tell you two stories of plural marriage, my own personal experiences. I was born into a plural family in Hilldale. My father had married his fourth wife a month before I was born. I grew up just loving and respecting each one of my mothers. They're very special to me. And I developed a close bond with all of my siblings. I was taught the Mormon gospel growing up. When I was 18 years old, I married into a plural family as the second wife. So here I was, a young, naive girl with a lot of learning to do. I had ideas of what married life would be like, but here I was coming into a family that was already built, and I knew it was up to me to mold into that family. And I soon found out that the first wife was very controlling. She demanded to know my whereabouts constantly. Any money I earned, I turned over to her, and I based my life around how to please her that day. I didn't have a relationship with my husband. She would yell at me and put me down. And so I began to build an emotional wall around myself to protect myself, and I fell into a deep depression. And I blamed myself for any problems and lack of communication or anything that was going on in the family. And guilt took over me because I could see my parents could live it, but how come I couldn't? And I hated myself. I abused myself. And the hardest thing in all of this was I couldn't love her children. And children are my life. I just love children. And she wouldn't let me touch her children. She wouldn't let me hug them. And one day she came in to me and said, "Our family was perfect until you came." And I began to have suicidal thoughts. I thought if I was gone, then their family could get back to the way it was. And I just struggled to face each day. And one day I was at a very low point, and I picked up the Bible and reread Christ's teachings about love, teachings that I had learned in my youth. And I realized I had been going about life all wrong. I was depending on someone else for my own happiness. I was struggling each day to please her. And I knew that I needed to center my life around Jesus, not around how to make her happy each day. I never had any children of my own then, and I truly felt that my life was at a very low point. This was 3 years there. 3 years after that marriage, my church could see that I was having a difficult time, and they removed me from that family. I was given a choice to remarry as a first wife or into another plural situation. I chose to be married into a plural situation because I had a true belief that Joseph Smith's teachings about the celestial law. And I was really trying to focus my life more around Jesus. I married into Winston Blackmore's family. I beat Edith as the 25th wife. And when I married into his family, the first thing he told me is, "You're marrying us." He said, "We're a family, you're marrying us." And he said, "And you don't have to check in with any other mother." He said, and because there were so many of them, I didn't feel like I was singled out. And I went to each lady, and I got to know each lady as a personal friend. So there was no head mother that I had to check in with on a daily basis. And they all looked out for one another. And, of course, if there's going to be a lot of mothers, there will be a lot of children. And that was so exciting to me. I'll tell you a little story. Right after I married into his family, one of the children started crying, and I bent down and picked it up, and then I looked over my shoulder to see which mother was going to yell at me for picking up that child. And the mother said, "Oh, thank you for helping that child." And I was so overjoyed that I could help children. And I, of course, brought this emotional baggage from the previous years of abuse, but Winston and these other ladies have helped me so much, and they love me for being myself. And one thing, like Edith said, Winston doesn't listen to one wife complain about another, and I know he's not going to listen to me complain about another wife, so I know he's not listening to another wife complain about me. After I'd been married to Winston for about a year, there was a split in our church, and Winston has kept so stable in his Mormon beliefs, and it's been a rocky road for a lot of us because we're cut off from family ties in the South, but he has helped us to continue believing the gospel. He saw my talents working with children, and he encouraged me to go to college and university. I attended College of the Rockies and the University of Victoria in Canada, and I have a bachelor's degree in education. Thank you. I have had 5 beautiful children of my own, which are the greatest joys of my life. And the support system I have around me is huge. My sister wives daily do and say things that build me up and encourage me. We get so busy with dishes and laundry and diapers and everything, but I'm so happy to be a part of that. So, yes, as we said earlier, I've been married for 15 years next month. If there's anything I've learned is that plural marriage can be lived. But I realize that my foundation is not plural marriage. That's not what I'm living my life. That's not my foundation. I had to get close to Christ and live the gospel laid out by Joseph Smith. And that's what I want to teach my children. And plural marriage, I feel, is one of the teachings that Joseph Smith taught. And so if you first build your foundation on Jesus, then go from there. That's how I want to teach my children. So if they make that choice in the future, that's their own choice. I don't hold any grudges towards my previous family. I only wish them happiness. I feel like I've taken lessons that I learned there, helped me today to live very happy in plural marriage. I feel more open-minded, and I just want to love everyone like Jesus taught. Thank you.
Hello, everyone. My name is Hannah Blackmore. I am Winston Blackmore's daughter also. I'm his 15th child, so I guess I'm one of the older batch. There's 130 children after me. I was asked to share my experience with plural marriage, so I'll just go ahead with that. Growing up in a large family was a wonderful experience for me. We had a lot of mothers, and the mothers were an amazing example to us. They were very kind and loving towards each other and to the children, and they helped each other out whenever they could. When I was 10 years old, my family split from the FLDS group, and after that, there were no plural marriages that we had for a really long time that I know of. A few of my older sisters grew up and got married, but no one was interested in marrying somebody who already had a wife. I never thought that I would be interested in something like that until I was actually old enough to be married. I was 19, and I realized that I wanted more than just what my sisters had. So I did the only thing I knew to do, which was ask the Lord where I should go and who to marry. And he showed me. I've been married to a good man and his wife for 5 years now. And a few years after I was married, my younger sister joined our family as well. I never understood how much actually went into living this way. It is a huge commitment, and it takes a lot of dedication. One of my friends described plural marriage to me like this, and I loved the way she said it. She said, "Plural marriage is more. It's more hard times, but there's more good times. It's more sadness, but there's more joy. And there's more heartache, but there's also more love. And it's much more fulfilling." And I love the way that she said that, because that is exactly how I feel about it. I believe the principle of plural marriage to be as important as the principle of baptism or any of the principles of the gospel. I believe that we've been given all the principles that we need to become like our Father in heaven, and that includes the principle of plural marriage. It is a lot of hard work, and it shouldn't be taken lightly. It's very easy for people to pervert it. It takes a firm belief in its purpose to understand why we need it and why we're doing it and how to live it correctly. And I believe that it must be authorized of God. We have to use our free agency, and it has to be something that we want. When President John Taylor was approached with signing the manifesto, he went before the Lord and received a revelation, which we refer to as the 1886 revelation. I don't think it's recognized in the LDS church, but I would like to read a part of it. "My son John, you have asked me concerning the new and everlasting covenant and how far it is binding upon my people, thus saith the Lord. All commandments that I give must be obeyed by those calling themselves by my name, unless they are revoked by me or by my authority. And how can I revoke an everlasting covenant? For I, the Lord, am everlasting, and my everlasting covenants cannot be abrogated nor done away with, but they stand forever." And I believe that this addresses the legitimacy of plural marriage and why it should still be a part of our faith. I don't think that we can just get rid of a principle of the gospel because it is unpopular or because we find it too difficult. The truth is that plural marriage is hard, and it is a lot of work, and there's a lot of days where it isn't one bit fun. But I believe that this life is about growth, and it gives you a lot of opportunity for growth. Like Mother Edith and Mother Elise said, there, it shows you who you are, and you have to dig down to the deepest corners of who you are, and it makes you either become better or it doesn't help you at all. But this symposium is about what Mormonism means to each of you and what it means to me. And I guess what it means to me is it's following all the principles of the gospel, not just the ones that I like. It's not just the ones that are easy. It's taking the gospel and making it my own and making it my life. And I believe it's about striving for personal excellence. And like we all know, it's loving God and loving others. And this is all I feel to say, and I thank you for your time.
I'm Elsie Blackmore. My family? You can't hear me?
Can you hear?
Hi, I'm Elsie Blackmore. My family has been living plural marriage for 3 generations now. I'm a product of it, and I'm proud of that fact. I'm the 19th daughter and the 37th child of Winston Blackmore. I'm the oldest girl at home, and my responsibilities include looking out for my younger siblings, helping my parents, and leading our Bountiful Relief Society.
I'm Dolly Blackmore. I'm the 21st daughter and 42nd child of Winston Blackmore, and she's my mother. I'm her oldest daughter. I come from 3 generations from both sides of plural marriage, so it's really who I am, and I'm 18 years old. Sorry. We wanted to share a little of what we think makes our family special.
And why we feel so blessed to be children of plural marriage.
We have 27 mothers, and although a couple have left, we still have good relationships with their children. And with them. We have 145 brothers and sisters, 76 sisters, and 69 brothers. And we have Dad has 72 grandkids. And one great-grandchild, and one on the way, so he's pretty excited. We'll always have a million best friends. I have 2 sisters my age and 8 brothers. And I have a lot of younger sisters than me and older. And so they've always all been my best friends. They look up to me so much, and it makes me feel so special and makes me want to be a good example to them.
We never run out of people to love and people to love us. Lots of people are under the impression that plural marriage is a recipe for abuse and for neglect. In my experience, it has been the exact opposite. My big family is constantly looking out for one another. Us children have always had an unspoken code of loyalty. One story I can recall happened 2 weeks ago. One of our little brothers, we were at our family campsite, and he wandered off, and we couldn't find him. And I swear, within 10 minutes, then we had a search party of 100 people running around. Even the little kids, 2 years old, were waddling through the forest yelling his name, or what they thought was his name. Anyway, we found him, and turns out one of the older girls had just taken him for a walk. But it was so encouraging to see how many people cared to find him, and to see that heartbreak in the to see the heartbreak in everyone when he was lost. I feel so blessed that God has given me this family and so many people to love me.
So these are a couple groups of the girls. This one up in the corner, they're all the same age, and they're about 2 years younger than both of us. And it's a really good example of how you can just be best friends with your sisters. I mean, it's almost hard to be really close to someone that's not, because we live with our best friends and we see them every day. And it makes all the disagreements and everything so much better if you always have someone to turn to. If you're in a fight, both of you have somebody to turn to when you just feel like you're being given up on by one person. And so I think that makes it a lot easier. And, like, we're best friends. She's 6 months older than me, and it's not constant. We haven't fought for a really long time. We have before, but not for a long time. And when I'm looking for my friends, I look for her. She's my last sister at home that's my age that's unmarried. Well, I only have one. But she's who I go to because, I don't know, it's just like anyone's best friend, but she just happens to be blood. Our mothers are my biggest role models. They all have loved us like their own, and they each fill an irreplaceable spot in our hearts and our family. This isn't all of them, but this is the ones that we could find off of Facebook. I think the most admirable thing about them is they never took their personal problems with each other out on their kids. If my mom was having a problem with another mom, she wasn't mean to her kids. She wasn't mean to the other mother's kids, and they weren't mean to me when they were having a problem with my mom. That's not what it was about. It wasn't, you're not trying to get to each other. I mean, you're just loving each other anyway, and you're going day by day and figuring things out as just one day at a time, because that's the only thing you can do.
Our dad is the best dad in the world. It takes a pretty impressive man to be able to love to the extent our father does. All my life, Dad taught us to love our mothers, to be kind to everyone. And to thank God for every single thing we have. He is one of the most selfless people I have ever known. He taught us that when you are in the service of others, you are in the service of God. Yes, I know he isn't perfect, but who is? He's still my role model. I still look up to him, and I still pray every day that I can be the kind of person that he is.
Our parents did everything to give us the best life. They sacrificed so much for us. They even let us get away with a couple things when we thought we were so sneaky. Imagine all these little teeny kids, all the same age. Here, I have a story. We'd, around lunch or dinner, we would all go to one mom's house when she had dinner going, and we would eat and just in time to make it to the other mom's house for dinner. We would hit up all the houses that they'd let us, and I'm sure they could tell by our faces and clothes we'd eaten. I'm sure they could. But they still sit us up and feed the poor little orphan children still. They've always just protected us so much and taking so good care of us. You never felt like you were unwelcome in her house or her space if it wasn't your birth mom.
I am the president of the Relief Society. Sorry. Let's go find it. Our Relief Society is made up of 20 of my sisters, all younger than me, between the ages of 13 and 19. Every single one of them decided for themselves that they wanted to be part of this. No one made them. We gave them a choice, and they all decided that they wanted to dedicate their time to helping others. There are a couple of funny things about our family. We are probably the only family that can have a bull elk killed, cleaned, and eaten in an hour. Every single thing we do becomes a party because there's so many people, and we're all interested in making it fun. I mean, it is hard when it's not fun when you're the only person there trying to do all the work. Because we're such a big family, then there's big things to do. So if everyone is part of it, then it goes by fast, and you can make it so enjoyable.
We do everything in mass amounts. Canning, you know, 600 to 2,000 bottles of everything. And just gardening and wood days and camping. It's huge, like 200 or more people at camp, are every camp trip. And it makes it so much better. It makes working fun. Like, usually, you know, with our Relief Society, we'll just turn up the music and sing and laugh the whole time. It's all your sisters. And just get it done. And it usually turns into a party, like a sleepover or a lake day. And those get kind of out of hand sometimes. This middle picture, I think there is about 21 girls at our sleepover. All on the floor. Yeah, I got the bed. Thank goodness. But it just... And most of those girls, that's when more of them were the same age. So there's 8 or 9 girls the same age where we only had 3. And so it looks just as fun, though. I mean, they have usually kind of groups that are more hang out together, but they all get along really, really well with each other. And they get along really well with us. They respect us a lot. And that makes it way, way easier to be a good example when you know that they want to be like you.
Our family works because we choose to make it work. We fight, we cry, we learn. We share, we enjoy. We're human. We have human emotions, but we live day one day at a time, and we do the very best we can. You know, it's perfect.
It's not always easy. It really isn't. It gets really stressful sometimes, but we're so blessed, and we're so happy we're us. We're so happy where we are, or I am at least. I'm so thankful for my mothers and my sisters and my brothers and just everybody that is constantly there for me.
Thank you all.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. What's going on with the lights? Oh, okay. All right. I thought perhaps we were going for a little disco tech effect, because nothing brings the LDS and FLDS together like disco. Here at Sunstone, we are committed. We are going to open up. We've got 15 minutes for questions, so I really want you to think, what is the most concise way I can ask this question? Lay that on your heart, and... While we're lining up here to ask questions, beforehand we had a little conversation where they said, they know they don't get to ask about, like, our bedroom lives, right? And I said, oh, no, we're grown. We're adults. We know, right? We know that. Everybody here has been asked some kind of question about their garments that you've had to say, that's not a conversation I have with strangers. Thanks so much for asking. Move along. So another thing we have in common. So think about the conciseness of your question. We've got 15 minutes. Let's open it up with the esteemed...
Hi. This is just going to be a very brief personal comment. I'm Michael Quinn, and I've written about Mormon fundamentalist life 25 years ago, back before many of you were born. I interviewed husbands, plural wives, and teenage children of plural wives for an article that was published in Dialogue, Journal of Mormon Thought. And it was a great exposure for me of what contemporary principle living was about. I thought I understood what it would be like before I started these interviews, because I knew so much about 19th century plural marriage living, and I found that it was so different because these teenage girls and boys in particular talked to me about how they negotiated their experience, which is something I really never saw in the 19th century documents that I'd read. It was always the husband and the wife, and I hadn't really seen it from the point of view of the children. And some of the children were living in environments where they were only with other polygamous children. Others we're suburban and living in Salt Lake Valley, and we're attending public schools, and many of their friends were Mormon or even non-Mormon, and how they negotiated their lives with that. Having said that, it bowls me over as a child of a split family, Roman Catholic father and Mormon sixth generation mother. I was the only one. And to think of a family of 145 children just bowls me over. And I want to congratulate you on negotiating your lives as well as you have. Thank you.
So it really made a lot of sense to me the way you're saying that there's more of, you know, I mean, a lot of fun. I enjoy parties. I enjoy big groups. It sounds like a lot of fun to have this big support group. As a father of two daughters that I like to spend my time with my daughters, I'm worried about quality and quantity both. I'm wondering specifically about your relationships with your fathers, and since that's the one area that you don't have quite as much, and yeah, any thoughts about that? Thanks.
I think, well, when we're little, we see him more in a group. When we have breakfast with him every morning before school, he knows all of our names. He knows who all of we are personally. And usually when we're older, if we feel like we need dad time, we'll single him out. We'll go find him and say, Dad, I need to spend a day with you, and go to work with him. I have spent tons of time with him. I know him really well. He really cares about where I'm going in my life, and he cares to know. And same with all of them. Anyone who is looking for that can find it. And he makes time, and he's there for us if we want him to be.
You care about your two daughters, I can imagine. You think the world of them, I bet. But our dad, it's the same for him. He thinks the world of all 45 of us. You want your children to succeed. He wants us to succeed. I don't think that your love has to be spared out, fared out. Your love grows. Love grows with the more you get, the more love you have. So it's not something I have a certain amount, I only can give this much to each person. No. Every person gets the same amount of love. You just have to be capable of loving that much.
Seems like a uniquely clap. But this seems like a problem that is unique to polygamy. I think you dropped a one. I think you said there are 45 of us. 145. Yeah. Same. Melly.
Yeah. So I really like this emphasis on like the lived experience of plural marriage. I'm kind of interested a little bit in any kind of doctrinal differences you've noticed between the LDS and the FLDS, like the mainstream LDS church and the in different FLDS branches. I'm wondering if there's, besides plural marriage, something else that you've looked at and you've like, oh, you guys are a little bit different.
One thing I've noticed, and again, this is my perspective, is we've taken, as a billion people, has taken something that was so simple and complicated it. It, you know, and so it's easy to look and say, well, I don't believe in that, or I don't believe in that, but the reality is that we all have, like I said, the different things in life to do. And as far as doctrine goes, I really don't think it's that. I mean, I know that the mainstream LDS has changed a few. And that's what we do, is we go back to, clear back to Joseph Smith and go with that. You know, it's like she said, you can't just take principles and say, well, that's too hard. I don't know how people are going to accept that, so let's put it, you know. So, but go ahead.
When you were saying it, how, is there anything different, doctrinal difference? Well, I, for one, use as a resource a lot of the time the FL, or the, I used the Latter-day Saint website, like the church website, to get family home evening ideas for my children. And I'm constantly doing it. It's right there on my phone all the time. And yes, they don't live plural marriage. That's probably one of the big differences. But I don't see a lot of differences. Like, I love Brother Monson. I love his talks. I listen to him all the time. I listen to YouTube clips of Meet the Mormons and things like that. I think it's awesome. They're just living a lot of the same principles and beliefs that I believe. So.
First, I'm so grateful that you guys are here. I had an opportunity to spend some time with Elise and Eva several months ago, and we shared a meal and we shared experiences, and it was beautiful. And so I'm so glad that everyone's getting a little taste of what I got several months ago. So thank you for being here to share your experiences in your spirit. Okay, so you mentioned the split that your church had, and because we're talking about many Mormonisms, there's several of us who are transitioning, kind of reinterpreting our experience of Mormonism. And so as you have experienced kind of transitioning from one version of Mormonism, right, to another, I'm just wondering what advice you may have for anyone or what things were helpful for you to get you through that transition and move into a new version of your Mormonism or new lifestyle.
One thing Winston did for us back when Warren Jeff started taking over for his father, even before his father died, there was a lot of things that Warren was teaching that Winston would say that we questioned. And he'd say, okay, what does God say about it? And he'd open up the Doctrine and Covenants or the Book of Mormon, and then he'd say, you decide for yourself. And he took the time to help us distinguish. And so as far as the FLDS, we were never, ever under Warren Jeff's. We kind of hung on there for a little bit until Uncle Rulon died, and we did that out of respect for him. But after that, we just I don't think that we ever transitioned from what we ever really were. We just never got involved in that because we had someone that would say, okay, you know, there's discrepancies here. That doesn't taste good. It doesn't smell good. Mm. Decide for yourself and see what God has to say about it, or the Prophet Joseph. So,
I think the hardest. Hello? There. I think the hardest thing with this split that I'm still working on to this day is the separation of family. Because I haven't seen or talked to my mother in 5 years because the church cut her off from seeing me. Because of my choice to stay with Winston. And so for me to get through to where I am today has taken love. And so when I'm trying to teach my children, they'll say, how come I can't ever see Grandma? I'll tell them stories about her, and I'll show them pictures, and I'll try to keep her memory alive the best I can. But I think that's been one of the hardest things for me was separation of family. I do have my mother's address, and I have my children send her letters, and I hope she gets them. That's my only hope there. So to pull through, I just had to go back to the basic, the Bible, the Book of Mormon, the Doctrine and Covenants, and the teachings of the Prophet Joseph. That's what I had to find out for myself. And in the scriptures it said, the time will come when you will have to stand on your own testimony. I feel like that time is now.
One thing my dad always said is kind of what she said. He had a 3-in-1, and he would say, if it doesn't match up with this, which is the Book of Mormon, the Doctrine and Covenants, and the Pearl of Great Price, then it's not true. If that anything that somebody tells you, any new doctrine, anything, if it doesn't match up with the words of the Savior, then it's probably not good. And I think that we all have that, where we are able to go before the Lord and ask him to tell us if it's true or not. And that's what I've done. And even after I was married, it was like I wasn't even really converted to what I believed completely until after I was married, and I actually had to go back during some hard times and find out for myself. And
that helps more than anything, I believe, just your relationship with the Lord and being able to ask him, because he will only reveal truth.
Linz, can we take an extra 5 for questions? Can we go over a little? Okay, I'm going to do a quick thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you to our presenters. Thank you to this beautiful audience. This is a new thing under the sun, having this conversation. And it happens with people who show up with their hard questions and are here to listen deeply. And it happens when we have people who are willing to share their stories. And it takes all of us, right? So thank you. Give yourselves a big round of applause. For those of you that have hot lunch plans that do not include getting down to the nitty-gritty of plural marriage, we'll see you at the next session. For the rest of us, let's keep going.
My question has to do with the brothers, your brothers. It just appears to me, as an outsider to this whole kind of living, that there wouldn't be young girls that would be interested in them. What's the marriage pattern for your brothers as they get 18, 19, 20 years old?
That is a total individual thing. Each one of them have been different. Some have chosen to be a part of it, and some haven't. But they're still come around. We still love them just the same. It is all personal choice.
Yeah. Our brothers are a little bit ridiculous. They're all ridiculously good-looking. And so they have, like, hordes of girls after them all the time. So I think they're trying to decide, do I want to live plural marriage and the gospel when this is so much more fun? Like, we don't have that many older brothers that are unmarried. There's actually not any of them. And a few of our older brothers do live this way. But right now it's just more like they're teenagers, so I don't think that any of them have actually had to make that choice yet.
So at the beginning, you said you're apprehensive about the media spotlight, the media attention. You shouldn't be. You were extremely, all of you, beautiful, extremely effective advocates for what you believe.
Thank you so much. I'd have to tell you, one day someone says to us, sometimes the media is a necessary evil. And I said, well, in our experience, we've only found it evil.
And I also wanted to say, I was very impressed with just how, everything everybody was saying, there was this kindness and goodness and concern that came across. And so the question I had is born of that concern, and it really gets to do with he scooped me a little bit with that last question. Even if we're not talking about 25 wives, we're talking about even 2, 3. That if you're only drawing from within a polygamous community, the numbers don't add up for the boys, right? They can't live the principle. So what do you say to your boys, knowing that they're facing that? How do you teach them? Because it's going to be really, really hard for them to do what you believe and you teach is required for the highest exaltation. So what do you say to your boys?
For one, we have connections with a lot of different groups. We don't just marry within our group. We have connections all around. And even if a girl from anywhere decides that that's what she wants to live and she's truly converted to it, it's all about that. It's not, as far as that, we haven't really run into that problem yet. I mean, ever, that I can think of.
I can't.
And it's whether they want to live it too. And the opportunity comes up. We have, like I said, we're connected to quite a few. So.
Do you guys ever say flirt to convert?
Can you ever?
No. Is that just an LDS thing? Just curious. No? That was a sincere question. Well, then you're welcome, because now you can. Ma'am.
This is more statement than a question.
My name is Connie Acord Bergstead, and James Allred and Elizabeth Warren, on my father's side, they're my third great-grandparents, and on my mother's side, they're my fourth great-grandparents. So I have polygamy in my roots, and I was born and raised in a monogamous situation. My parents had a temple marriage, but were not particularly happy, but they stayed together, for which I'm grateful. I was very pleased to hear from this sister that she was able to choose again and move from a bad marriage into a more happy, productive marriage. When I look at our world today with the serial monogamy, where relations break up and people never resolve conflict, I see polygamy as a happy solution. Even for people who are widowed, you would have other sisters to hold you up in the process of that great loss. Thank you for coming. Thank you for sharing from your hearts. And thank you with all my heart.
Thank you.
Well, I'm one of the old timers. I'm Ann Wild. I've been involved in this, trying to share our lifestyle with people since 2000. And I just wanted to thank the panel. I think they did a beautiful job. It's so nice to see the younger generation willing to speak up. When we first put out our book in 2000, it was really new territory. And people didn't know much about the lifestyle from a positive aspect. And it's really been heartwarming to see more and more people be willing to speak out and tell people it works for us. Somebody told me once that I was raised in plural marriage, there are more people for us to love and more people to love you. And I think you've proven that is the case. And I just wanted to thank you very much. You did a beautiful job.
Thank you. Elise, did you want to respond to the woman? I thought you were going to say something.
Oh, yes. I was just going to tell you, when I was going to speak here, I said to someone, I'm just going to tell my story. And they said, but you don't want to say anything negative about plural marriage, right? And I said, if I just said everything's all fine, it's beautiful, blah, 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 you know, that would be a lie. I wanted to tell the truth and reality, what's really happened. And
Hi, my name is Peter Harrison. I wanted to ask you a question about kind of an intersection. We're here talking about many faces of Mormonism, and one that's predominantly, as my lived experience as a gay Mormon, how does that fit within the paradigm of polygamous marriage? I mean, statistically, there's likely to be children within that home that are LGBT in some way, and so how is that kind of addressed, or what is that like for your community?
Great question.
Yeah, go ahead.
It's crazy because we're from such a large family and background, but I don't know of anybody. I don't have any cousins or family that are, but I do have a friend who is, and I look at her lifestyle like she looks at mine. We're respectful of each other, and we still love each other regardless of our life choices, and we believe that God is the judge, that nobody here can just tell us what's right or what's wrong about that. And so I don't really know how to answer your question, but it hasn't ever come up. So I don't know if anybody
else. Yeah, when I was attending university, then there was a lot of stigma about the FLDS and their beliefs. And people would come and say, for race, they would come and tell me, why do you hate blacks? And I said, I don't hate blacks. Why do you say that? And they said, well, Warren Jeffs says this and this about him. And I says, that's what he says, and I don't hate blacks. And they said, would you get a picture with them? And I says, oh, yeah. And there was me with stark white with a bunch of friends from Africa and different places. And I said, they're just people. And that's how I feel also about gays, that's their choice. They can live that way if they want. That's their choice.
Winston made a good comment when he said, if anybody probably shouldn't be judging another person's lifestyle, don't you think that's us? And, you know, I can honestly say that if I had one of my children come to me and tell me that they were gay or lesbian or whatever, it would not for one second change my love for them. Anyway, again, that is my opinions. I think God loves every one of us, and he doesn't pick and choose.
Edith, and feel free to say no. Nobody's listening. But can you tell that story of Winston wrestling with that? Nope. Okay, yes, moving along.
Yes, you can. Yes, you can. It's the story where you said Winston said who can choose whether what to believe.
Because it was my understanding that he really had to wrestle with that.
Yeah.
That his, well, you tell me when I fall outside the word. having been grown up, like you said, old-fashioned, right? And not being in conversation, not knowing any gay people, that he held to an older understanding of who gay people were in Heavenly Father's plan.
He had a really, really close friend come to him and tell him. And he said, and I looked at him, and I was like, okay. And he says, and I left his shop, and I was driving down the road, kind of, you know, wow. And he said, and the thought came across when Christ said, leave judgment to me, it's mine.
Oh.
And he said, and I've never had a problem since. So God really did make it easy for us when he said, don't judge, leave it to me. It's so liberating to know we don't have to do that.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Kathy. You all did a wonderful job. You're a beautiful family. I had a question for Hannah. In terms of the marriage that you participated in that was not good, and the marriage that you had later that was... Oh, I'm sorry.
You're talking about me?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. I'm Hannah's sorry. The marriage that you had that did not work well, and the one that you had with Winston, which it sounds like has worked well for you. What can we learn from that in terms of what do you think the root causes of the problem in that first marriage were?
Okay.
Is it doctrinal? Is it people? What do you think?
I think it was very personal that, for one, I was very young and she was older. She had her family's ways set. And here I come to change it. The young, beautiful wife, as she said, you know. But I was just me. I didn't want to change anything. I just wanted to fit into it. I think jealousy also comes into place. I learned a lot about my own personal feelings at that time. That it was easy for me to go into Winston's family because I had got over jealousy issues before. Like, it didn't bother me that when I went into Winston's family, I never got the amount of time or attention that another lady did because I had already learned from that. But I hope, like, I've always had personal feelings that I should have done this better. I should have done this. I should have communicated better and all stuff. But when I look back, I thought, I don't know what else I could have done. So... But it does take a good communication on everyone's part. And I guess I just had a lot of learning to do myself. I'm still trying to find myself at the young age. So I don't know.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Jealousy is one of those helium balloons that if you don't pop it as it's popping up, pretty soon you'll have 1,000 of them, and it eats you alive.
Okay, we're at a quarter till, so we are going to do a final thank you round of applause. And if you have questions, then just come up afterwards, and we'll...